Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 4. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films. Graham Flanagan of Business Insider.
How's it going, Graham?
Hey, Ben, what's up?
So, today saw the release of a new trailer for Tomorrowland, a trailer that I won't be watching because I'm totally sold on the movie and I'm afraid that any trailers from now on will spoil the movie.
Why are you sold on the movie if you haven't seen any footage?
Okay. Well, I was going to throw the discussion to you, but you threw it right back at me, so I will answer that question. It's two words, Brad Bird. Brad Bird has made, four feature films now? And each of them have been excellent. Each of them have been, from a screenplay standpoint, from a directing standpoint, from performances, everything. The guy just knows how to make a great movie. His last film, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, was his first foray into live action. And I think I considered it a great film, especially a great action film, but I think you can see he was still getting his sea legs in terms of, you know, finding the exact way to shoot certain scenes in live action. I think that's a little clear. And then I think if you're able, if you really, really, really want to pick on that movie in any other way, it would be for the screenplay, just because it's got some, you know, familiar kind of spy movie tropes and things like that. That was him. Basically, there was an opening for that project, and he hopped aboard and did the best he could, and he managed to make it probably the best film in that series. And then this time around, he's back in live action, but he's also working on a screenplay that he entirely came up with on his own. Yes, it's Disney branded, and yes, Damon Lindelof co-wrote it with him, but this is a pure Brad Bird film as far as I can tell. And again, based on The Iron Giant, The Incredibles, Ratatouille, and Mission Impossible, and also his work on The Simpsons and Family Dog, this is a guy that just knows how to make a great movie, and here he is directing a summer special effects driven, hopefully blockbuster, with free reign that's fairly original based on not really any pre-existing properties, and it's rated PG, it's got a girl as a lead, and it's got George Clooney, who doesn't, you know, just star in anything, as a supporting character. So there's all these kind of interesting things going on about it, and honestly, I don't know a whole lot about the story of Tomorrowland, other than I think it has something to do with an alternate universe where there's a world that kind of resembles the Tomorrowland of Walt Disney World and I think Disneyland. I think that's all I really know about it, and based on that pitch, I'm in.
Yeah, I admire your sort of self-control for being able to resist looking at footage for movies that you want to see. I mean, I rarely ever do that. If a trailer comes out, I want to taste. It's sort of like shaking the box of a Christmas present before you unwrap it.
I totally get it, though. Yeah, it's more like ripping off a little bit of the wrapping to see a corner of the Christmas present. And for me, it sucks, and it's especially hard, and oftentimes I cave. And I might cave for Tomorrowland. I mean, I'm not a monk, you know? But I feel like there's certain things. I've definitely had negative experiences in the theater by seeing something for the fourth time on the big screen that I already saw, you know, the previous three times on YouTube. And it's a really frustrating moment when you realize, man, that was it wasn't necessarily a huge plot twist, but it was a major moment in this movie that I know about, you know, that wasn't a surprise.
The nature of trailers and marketing is that you sometimes have to put some of the coolest visuals featured in the movie in the trailer to, like, really sell the audience who needs a trailer to make their decision.
Absolutely, and especially films that don't have that are a little bit maybe more original or don't have as much kind of, you know, market interest. You have a director like Christopher Nolan who can kind of market his movies based on his name. He doesn't need to show you anything from the third act of Interstellar in his trailers. But a movie like Tomorrowland that is an unproven commodity, they're going to show you as much as they can possibly show you to get you in that theater. You saw it with Terminator Genesis. That's a series that nobody really cares about anymore. They're desperate to get you in the theater to watch this new Terminator movie. So what do? They released this trailer a couple of weeks ago with a tremendous plot twist that changes the dynamic of the entire franchise. And you found out about it in a trailer that you watched on YouTube on your iPhone, you know, and it's just like, it's disrespectful to the material, and it's frustrating as a fan. And for movies like Terminator Genesis that I'm not really anticipating that much, you know, I'll give up that experience just so I can see the trailer. But for a movie I really care about, like Tomorrowland or the new Steven Spielberg movie or the new Martin Scorsese movie, I'm not going to watch much more than the first teaser because after that they're going to start giving away stuff that I want to experience for the first time on the big screen.
I totally get that. And it's a great feeling to go into a movie not having seen any of the promotional materials. And for me, that's becoming more and more rare because I'm constantly reading about movies on the internet, watching trailers, you know, kind of having an idea of what I'm about to see before I see it. But it's a great feeling when you just kind of walk in to something. My girlfriend and I saw Ex Machina the other day, and we were supposed to see While We're Young, but she'd seen the trailers to that. She had never heard of Ex Machina. We went to see it because the timing worked out better that way. And she had no idea what it entailed. And I kind of envied her for having that sort of perspective going into it, because I'd seen trailers, certain things happened in the movie, and I was like, okay, well, we haven't seen this thing yet that happens in the trailer. You know, I know that this is coming, it hasn't happened yet. But she was just walking in, you know, completely fresh, and I envy that, and I'm going to think about trying to take that approach a little more often, especially with these movies, like you said, like the big ones, like the Spielberg, Wes Anderson, Paul Thomas Anderson, things like that. But it's tough in this era.
Yeah, and I'm trying to do the same thing with the Mad Max. I work with a guy, and he told me that he started watching the first trailer for Mad Max Fury Road, and there's that slow dolly in on, like, you know, that kind of hot rod car or whatever at the beginning in the desert. And he realized, like, within a few seconds into that shot that he was sold on the movie, and he cut, you know, he cut his browser, he closed his browser tab, and he was like, I'm in, I don't need to see anything else. And I think that's a really great, I guess it's just, it comes down to these trailers aren't made for me, you know? I mean, I'm going to see...
Right.
I'm going to see the movie, I'll watch every single bit of, if I like Tomorrowland, I'll watch every single trailer there is out there. And if I don't like it, then I'll probably never have to bother watching.
And with these Tomorrowland trailers, I won't spoil anything for you, but they've released three lengthy trailers of Tomorrowland so far, each of them about, you know, at least a minute and a half or 2 minutes. And while they do give you an idea of what happens and what where the characters go and sort of what the universe is, so much still has yet to be revealed in terms of who's the good guy, who's the bad guy, if that's even the dynamic, what is Tomorrowland, why does it exist, and you know, there's so much. So the way that they've been putting these trailers together has definitely maintained the sense of intrigue and secrecy, you know, that'll definitely get a lot of people in. The question is, will it hurt the movie in terms of people who have no idea what it is, basing their decision on whether or not they like what they see in the trailer, even though there are some amazing visuals and it looks like a lot of fun? I think that the fact that they're being so vague about what happens could potentially hurt it in the end, but that's the risk you have to take with an original movie, you know, especially if you want people to have a new type of experience, that's what I'm hoping Brad Bird is going to give us here.
Yeah, and I mean, it's another one of those things where the audience will do whatever you train them to do. If you're focused on quarterly earnings of a, you know, of a blockbuster, then yeah, you probably need to go ahead and show them everything so that you have a huge opening weekend, and then that's it, you know. But if you really want to, if you're Disney, you know, the one of the biggest studios in the world, maybe the biggest studio with these giant properties, they dictate how people watch movies. So and how people consume movie marketing and media. So if they release just a little bit, if they stop releasing Star Wars trailers today, which, by the way, I'm done watching Star Wars Force Awakens trailers. I don't need to see any more of that until I'm in the theater. But if they stop doing that today, then people wouldn't not go see Star Wars. I mean, of course they would. They might. You might get more people to go see Star Wars opening weekend so they can be part of that conversation. That, you know, if... And so if the studio had the guts to train their audience, which is huge, and which will do whatever they tell them to, if they had the guts to train them to watch movie materials in a new way, or really an old way, because really, I mean, how much people know about E.T. before they went and made that? But one of the biggest movies of all time, for Star Wars, even. You know, why would... I guess I don't understand. I guess they just need content for YouTube, so they just fill it up with stuff from the movies. I don't know.
Absolutely. And so they need reassurance. The marketing people, the money men and the money women need reassurance that they are going to put butts in the seats and swipe debit cards and, you know, have people handing in their hard earned money. It's a bet, and they want the bet to be as safe as possible.
Yeah, which and it is a big gamble. But then you kind of think, well, is it really? It is, at the end of the day, is Tomorrowland that big of a gamble if you've got it couched between freaking Avengers and Star Wars? Like, how have these massive billion-dollar franchises, which they have at least two of, that doesn't count all the other Avengers movies and all the Star Wars tie-ins and all the other, and the Pixars and the Frozens that Disney makes, why are these giant billion-dollar franchises keeping a studio scared at all? Like, they're the biggest dog on the block. They should have some swagger and release a completely mysterious movie with zero lead up and just say, boom, it's a Disney movie. Go see it. You're gonna. Give me
one. Well, I think that in this case, in the case of Tomorrowland, based on what I was saying about the fact that they haven't revealed that much about the movie,
so they kind of
trailers. Well, I think that you got to give them a little bit of credit for not sort of showing their hand in a way that, you know, maybe Furious 7 last night, and I felt like I'd seen every single set piece in the promotional materials. With this, I mean, I can guarantee you that you're going to see a lot. Even if you've seen all three trailers, you're going to see a lot that you haven't seen before. So I would say Disney, in terms of the marketing here, is sort of leaning in that direction of creating a sense of mystery and intrigue. But I think that that has the potential to bite them in terms of potentially sort of scaring off or confusing an audience that's just not going to automatically be compelled by that sense of mystery that you're talking about, that you wish you would see more of in promotional materials.
So you're saying there's a potential for a John Carter situation?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Which bit Disney pretty bad.
Well, and look, you know, George Clooney, the movies that have been big grossers for him, especially here in the States over the years, are built around a concept, and it pretty much comes down to the Ocean's movies, Ocean's 11 movies, and Gravity. Okay, you know, he's a huge part of those movies that gave those movies legitimacy with audiences in terms of saying I want to go see that movie. But I think the real stars of those movies were the concepts, and in the case of Gravity, the being lost in space, and he, you know, and then in the Ocean's movies, having all these actors there in a heist scenario. So in this case, while he is definitely at the forefront of the marketing, they're definitely selling the concept as the main.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't necessarily suggesting that George Clooney was the reason it was going to be successful, but I think it's a good reason why I have high hopes for the quality of the movie, because George Clooney picked his scripts pretty carefully, and it seems like a script would need to be pretty good if he's willing to play the Wilford Brimley, you know, crazy old man neighbor role rather than the dude that's hooking up with all the, you know, Julie Roberts's in the movie.
Well, you know, one thing I am a little intrigued by is that the writer here, or I think it's the sole writer, or it might be
it's
one
co-writer.
Of the writers. Co-writer is Damon Lindelof.
Yeah, yeah.
Conceived the story and wrote the script with Bird. Now, you know, he's had a couple of instances that, you know, he basically infuriated an entire fan base with Prometheus. He also did World War Z and Star Trek Into Darkness were received generally a little more, you know, they were received a little bit better, even though they're detractors for both of those movies. But,
yeah,
you know.
And I think he was kind of the savior of World War Z. He's the guy that buttoned a cleaner ending on that movie that ended up making it a lot more money, I think.
I love World War Z. I loved it.
Yeah. And he didn't get nearly the flack on Star Trek as did Kurtzman and Orsi, mostly because Bob Orsi was on message boards flaming people for disliking the movie. You know what? The only question mark on this entire project for me is Damon Lindelof. I'm a big Lost fan. I liked Star Trek Into Darkness. I liked a lot of Prometheus. But Damon Lindelof, I will freely admit, has some real bad habits as a writer. And maybe he's learned his lesson from being such a public face for so long. And maybe he's just kind of been, you know, able to sit back a little bit and be more of a writer and less of a Twitter, you know, personality. But he is a question mark for me. But again, I feel like, you know, a questionable writer who does good work sometimes is going to be used very well in the hands of an excellent writer and director.
Right.
Do you have any kind of predictions on how much money Tomorrowland is going to make based on what you've seen so far, based on the climate?
I'll make a prediction of at least 400 million worldwide. I think that international audiences are going to flock to this. They're two different audiences, international audiences and American audiences. You know, sometimes they sort of sync up like they did with blockbusters like Frozen. But man, I mean, sometimes American audiences will, you know, get a movie that studios would hope to be a giant blockbuster. American audiences will only bring in like 100 million, 150 million. But then you look overseas, and that same movie is just, you know, it's upwards of half a billion. It's, sometimes there's a big disparity there. Obviously, I realize that the United States is one territory, and then you're combining all the different global territories, so the numbers are going to be lopsided. But the United States is a big territory for
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, I mean, so if you're booking the Tomorrowland box office territory, you're saying 400 million global.
Yeah, 400 million global. That's on the low end of what I think it has the potential to make. But yeah, I think it'll get there, based solely on the star power of Clooney, his international draw as an international draw, and then also the concept of it being kid friendly and Disney, the Disney brand, which is really hot right now, and you know, just the sort of creativity that sort of flows from the trailer and the promotional materials will, I think, make it a big hit overseas.
Well, I'll throw out a quick prediction, and mine isn't a number because these numbers don't stick with me very well. But I'm afraid, as much as this is my number one most anticipated movie of the entire year. Going into January, this is the one movie I would go see in the theater this year if I got to see anything. So I'm really expecting great things from this, but I'm seeing this almost as a kind of speed racer situation. You've got a PG-rated movie based on a kind of a, you know, an idea. People go to, you know, Disney World and they go to Tomorrow World, so they Tomorrowland, so they kind of know, okay, this is kind of like a future 60s Silver Age kind of idea. But they haven't thought about it very much. Nobody was really thinking about Speed Racer when Speed Racer came out. Speed Racer had a kind of a pretty distinguished cast, but, you know, nobody that sets the box office on fire. And most importantly, it was, again, it's a PG-rated family adventure movie that was nestled in the middle of May. And I think Speed Racer was, like, right, maybe right after Crystal Skull, and or right after Iron Man and right before Crystal Skull. And it just got smashed. And then you've got this movie that's right after Avengers and right before, I'm not even sure what all, I mean, you've got Minions coming up later that next month, and you've got Mission Impossible and all the other big summer movies.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping for big things, but I have a feeling I'm going to be finding this DVD, you know, in the bin at Walmart next spring.
Well, if it's really good and generates really strong word of mouth, hopefully it will connect with audiences, and hopefully it will push, you know, Brad Bird further and further into that pantheon of great filmmakers that are alive and working today.
So is he not in that pantheon for you?
I wouldn't say that, just because he has, okay, his resume is so small. You know, he's made, in my opinion, I mean, I love The Iron Giant. I love Ratatouille and The Incredibles. And I haven't seen Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. In the words of Matt Scalise, I haven't seen it. So, that's on me, because that was on Netflix Instant for like 3 straight years. And I just never got around to watching it. And I look forward to it. But, man, his animation resume is just impeccable.
Yeah, as a fan of silent cinema and a fan of action movies, I think you'll really get a kick out of Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Because the way he stages certain things, it's unique for big action movies like that. So I think that's definitely something for you to look forward to.
Well, I will tell you, though, Iron Giant, that I remember when I saw that in the theater during its initial theatrical run, I had seen little, if any, promotional material for that movie. And I remember walking into it blind and just being completely blown away. You know, I mean, and I was like, this is the best animated movie I've seen in years. You know, it had an immediate impact on me. It was special. And that was all due to Brad Bird. So I'm always up for whatever he's doing. You know, just now that he's got a higher profile, things get more complicated. The expectations have changed. But at the end of the day, you know, like you're saying, like, I'll be there for him to see what he's gonna do with this concept.
And he also, to me, he seems like that kind of a stubborn personality that doesn't get hit. I think he's older. I mean, he's almost 60, and he's made such a small amount of movies. And I think the reason is because he enters projects with a lot of trepidation, and he doesn't seem to get himself in over his head where he's going to start getting bullied around. I mean, I think he probably has a bit of a big enough ego that he's able to throw his weight around and be the guy to make the big calls. And so that's another thing that gives me a lot of faith in this, is that he didn't need to make this. You know, he's not desperate for work. He's got his body of work. He can always go back to Pixar. That gives me confidence that he can really hit something out of the park and do something special. But, thanks for talking to me, Graham, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
All right, Stark. Appreciate it.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com and aspectradioshow.com.